Okay, thank you very much for giving me an occasion actually to present what you've heard already is a fragment of a much larger project. This book over here came out last year with Bülow in Vienna, and it's a book about the history of the Opera House from its inauguration in 1884 until basically the end of the First World War. There is a chapter there on Goldmark. I can tell you more about the project itself during the lunch break. Here I'll just say that I do define myself as a cultural historian rather than a musicologist. I'm not a musicologist, so I can't do any of the wonderful stylistic analysis we've heard in the previous presentations today. What I did in the book, rather, was to look at most important premieres in the Budapest Opera House from in the time frame. Some of them are scandalous as well. This is a very interesting and rich history. But I looked at them. I looked actually at the reception of works, and in order to do that, I had to read a lot of local newspapers, both Hungarian and German language ones, and not only the mainstream newspapers, which have already been quoted, but also the satirical press. So some of the things, as you will also see in the book and in my presentation today, well, I can't promise to play any music to you today, but I can promise a couple of funny pictures. So, well, my time's short, so with your permission, I'll read. In autumn of the turbulent year of 1916, 1 year after Goldmark's death, the Budapest Opera House's belated season opened with the much-heralded premiere of The Queen of Sheba. In anticipation of the premiere, the music critic of the Metropolitan German language newspaper Pastor Lloyd, which has already been quoted, Hans Hammerschlag was his name, was one of many who thought about the nature of the institution, the chronic opera question that had surrounded it since its very foundation, and among many other larger issues. So I give you a quote here. The opera stays in the foreground of the musical season, or perhaps much more so, the opera question that for years has become an unsolvable problem. The season began late and sluggishly dragged itself with two and later four performances per week, slowly forward, brought no news, only mere reprises, of which some were very thoroughly started and staged, but precisely the most important ones were wreckage. If one asked for an explanation for the reason for such a defective result, one would receive the routine answer, yes, the lack of money. In comparison with our other musical and cultural institutions, it almost seems as if the importance of the opera house was exaggerated. So that's the situation in which the premiere is taking place. The critical situation in the Opera House was perhaps best described by the satirical paper Bor Semyonko, which included an imaginary day program of the Budapest theaters in which the doors of the Opera House were repeatedly closed. In fact, the belated start of the opera season was closely followed by the news that yet another music institution, the popular opera, Neap Opera, began its season on 9th October with Oskar Strauss's Der Tampere Soldat, an event that certainly had great resonance among the press. This makes the success of Goldmark's premiere even more remarkable. The decision by the new directorship of the Opera House to start the season with the premiere of The Queen of Sheba was clearly connected to the Golden Jubilee of the first performance in 1876 in the Hungarian National Theatre. Interestingly, contrary to other significant works, such as those by Richard Wagner or by Richard Strauss later, the novelty of which was believed to have faded, Goldmark's much more standard legacy what seemed to be still resonating in the hearts of the local public. To understand why this was the case, it is essential to go back a few decades and to revisit the work's long and controversial history in Budapest, as indeed many commentators did on that occasion. It is certainly worth noting, as I think we have heard already, that Goldmark's international fame would largely be due to what was perceived as authentic Oriental music. In its first and most successful opera, The Queen of Sheba, had no experience with the Orient whatsoever and was never informed about, studied or taught Oriental music. Well, okay, we've heard that this might not be relevant, but it is something that is important to know in the context of the reception at the time. The Queen of Sheba was celebrated widely during Goldmark's lifetime and for some years thereafter, and turned him into one of the most famous and popular composers in Austria-Hungary, if not the most famous one. First performed in Vienna on the 10th of March 1875, the work proved so popular that it remained in the repertory of the Vienna Staatsoper continuously until at least as late as 1938. It proved even more successful in Budapest. Performances in numerous European cities followed, and the work became particularly popular in Italy for several decades. Goldmark wrote six other operas, many other works, including concertos, chamber, choral and orchestral works, and a symphonic poem, or at least one symphonic poem, clearly defined as such, but none of this ever matched the popularity of The Queen of Sheba internationally. A classic grand opera in four acts, based on a libretto by Mosenthal, loosely interpreting the biblical story, which I think there is no need really after the keynote speech today to retell again. It took years to write and underwent several permutations. The very positive reception of the premiere in 1879 in Vienna was energetically reported in the Budapest press as well. Pastor Lloyd, for example, noted that the opera has achieved a success that no other new opera, not even Aida, has had in Vienna during the last half a century, calling Goldmark a musician of our motherland, Vaterländische Tonsetzer. The journalist suggested that the reason for Goldmark's success lay in the fact that he managed to combine Jewishness, once again, a theme that's, I think, going to be recurrent to this conference, with Wagner's music, another theme that has already been highlighted, and that his Semitic element had a particular appeal. Quote, "The opera's Semitic element comes through as its erotic perfume." Again, eroticism is something that is very often in the reception, something that was present in Goldmark since his childhood and that nobody else has conceptualized as well as he did. An educated friend of music is attracted by the opera's consistent, truly dramatic character, the erotic physiognomy, and a fitting architectonic construction of the ensemble. The connection between the composer's Jewishness and his alleged ability to perceive the Oriental element would become one of the predominant aspects of the Budapest reception as well. Not all, however, were positive about Goldmark's extraordinary success. A year later, when the opera was about to be performed in Budapest in Hungarian in the National Theatre, the critical newspaper Egyet Értés described the Viennese reception of the premiere in a mixed mood of astonishment and incomprehension. Thus, by 1876, the Queen of Sheba had already generated controversial analysis in both cities. Some among the Budapest critics found it to Wagnerian, others to Jewish, while some others were simply, obviously, jealous of Goldmark's success in Vienna. As Pastor Lloyd succinctly concluded, the work already had a long history despite its young age. The reception of this work in the Hungarian capital was clearly important to Goldmark. He was present in Budapest for several days prior to the premiere and had personally directed the rehearsals. Pastor Lloyd, the newspaper that catered for the urban middle class, mostly a metropolitan one, many of whom were also Jewish, called him our countryman, unsere Landsmann. In the same article, if only by way of replying to the unjust mockery of Goldmark's work by what they called criticizing journalism, a rather pejorative term, the newspaper found the issue of Goldmark's Jewish origins unavoidable. Quote, Karl Goldmark is a Jew, and there unfortunately still exist enough prejudiced persons among those who call themselves educated who will find this sufficient ground to make harmful assaults. The paper attempted to downplay the myth of Oriental authenticity in Goldmark's music. Instead, parallels with the music of Meyerbeer, Berlioz, and Wagner were strongly emphasized. The newspaper was obviously replying to the increasingly offensive, if not maybe explicitly anti-Semitic language of some of the local newspapers, including the illustrated Borsen Yanko, which on this occasion issued not only this image over here, I think a wonderful example of, you know, radical orientalization of Goldmark and his legacy, but he also included a short mocking article in which Goldmark was depicted writing the opera from right to left with counterpoints. In the reviews of the premiere at the National Theatre, the Oriental myth resurfaced again, even in the papers critical of it. The same Pastor Lloyd, for example, mentioned that some found Goldmark's opera too specifically confessional, but continued to the description too, of the effect according to the Oriental cliché. The arrangement, for example, of the female chorus was allegedly highly original because of the combination of ballet and tambourine music, and suggested that Goldmark had mixed certain ritual music into his depiction of the demonic, agitated, and fanatical crowd. The paper concluded simply that Goldmark had written music that was worlds apart from the customary, and asserted that this was how one imagined the dance music of the Old Testament. The 19th century fascination with love-drunk femme fatale, significant during this premiere, resurfaced later, of course, with greater force during the reception of Richard Strauss's controversial work in the early 20th century. The Oriental element, however, would dominate the reports on Goldmark's opera throughout the 1870s and the 1880s. The effort that Goldmark and his supporters made in Budapest in order to ensure the triumph of the premiere at the National Theatre were successful only to an extent. Within the establishment, the opera seemed to have gained many admirers, the proof of which was a prestigious scholarship awarded to Goldmark, the son of our country, as they called him, Hazafia, from the Ministry of Religion and Education. The press, however, remained very reserved for a number of reasons. One was that prima donna Ruža Sabotanerni appeared a bad choice for many, and her natural beauty was often seen as her only advantage and the reasons for the choice. Second, many found the music just a bleak replica of Wagner's work, which itself had a very controversial reception in the city. However, already in the early, already as early as 1876, the press found it impossible to comprehend that the views of the educated music critics radically differed from the behavior of the public in the audience. It appears that Goldmark's spectacular, monumental musical work, and actually its dismissal by the local experts notwithstanding, had attracted a new type of audience that welcomed Goldmark to Budapest very enthusiastically. The premiere was attended by a large audience, moreover, one that responded to the opera with an uncommon appreciation. This was an audience that favored the new and the spectacular over the national. The papers might have applied all their sarcasm to the public enthusiasm that awarded even Tanerni, the prima donna, with ovations in its urge to applaud as they mocked the attitude, but it remained an undisputed fact that surprised, perplexed, and befuddled the critics. Almost a decade later, in May 1885, that is a year after a spectacular, even if also a scandalous, inauguration of the Opera House, the opera administration served the tastes of the public by staging The Queen of Sheba in the Opera House. It seems that the administration decided to introduce into the repertoire internationally reputed operas that had already enjoyed a successful reception in the National Theatre. In other words, they wanted to stress the continuity with the National Theatre, the two institutions in the same city. By that time, Goldmark's greatest opera had become a particular favorite among local theater goers. The timing and the venue posed significant difficulties, proving quite early in the history of the Opera House that this institution would not easily inherit the success of the National Theater, even if it had inherited most of its singing troupe. A widely publicized state exposition opened its doors in Budapest on the 2nd of May, practically coinciding with the premiere of Goldmark's celebrated work and stealing the limelight from the premiere. And yet, even though the attraction of the state exposition and the fierce competition with other theaters for the public during the whole of May 1885 somewhat diminished interest in Goldmark's work, the admirers of this musical legacy managed to fill the Opera House even in such unfavorable conditions. This public would remain faithful to Goldmark's musical legacy and would eventually provoke the final change in attitude and behavior in the Opera House from what it originally was, sort of careless and laissez-faire in the 1880s, to alert and devoted as it was already in the 1910s. Meanwhile, the 73-year-old Goldmark tried to touch upon this public's other patriotic sentiment and perhaps reach out to an entirely different Hungarian public altogether by composing a very unusual work, a symphonic poem on a Hungarian topic, Zrínyi. The piece became cause célèbre at the otherwise not very successful concert of the Philharmonic Society in the Opera in 1903, the program of which consisted of works by the local authors, that is Ferenc Erkel, Karl Goldmark, and Ödön Mihálovics. Whereas the other two works were also well received, Zrínyi clearly surpassed all expectations and took the public by storm. Goldmark himself conducted, accompanied by repeated applause and jubilant exclamations. The work truly became a sensational and anticipated novelty and provoked an unheard of reception. And that's one quote here for you from one of the local newspapers. Master Goldmark Zrínyi, composed specifically for the Philharmonic Jubilee celebration, the highly anticipated novelty of the evening featured as the pièce de résistance of the concert. The gray-haired artist who conducted his work himself became the true hero of this evening. When his venerable figure appeared on the stage of the audience, the audience gave him an ovation that was as sweeping as it was warm, which one could hardly have experienced before within these walls, writes the newspaper. The whole auditorium rose from their seats and broke into thunderous aeon, hail, and continued with a never-ending storm of celebratory applause, deeply touched The old master could only afford to express his gratitude with silent gestures. End quote. Such overwhelming success notwithstanding, the press analysis of the composition had the critics split on the issue of how successful Goldmark's tackling of the Hungarian topic actually was. Some, like Budapesti Hirlap, concluded that the composer's experimentation with Hungarian style put constraints on his imagination. Others, like Bolond Istok, another major satirical illustrated newspaper, were much more explicit and very critical. However, Neues Pechte Journal, another major German language newspaper, for example, called it a work of truly national spirit and character, a rhapsody in Hungarian style that provoked melancholic recollections of the idiosyncratic Hungarian grassland, the puszta. So there is a great contradiction between the receptions here. Some, in fact, went as far as to suggest that this was the opening of the true path to the creation of the Hungarian symphonic style. A great gallery of feelings full of patriotic sadness and intoxication with heroic death. The composer himself certainly prevailed upon some members of his closest circles to support him in suggesting the authenticity of his Hungarian feeling, even if that would involve reporting him speaking Hungarian, which in fact he never truly learned in his entire life. A journalist from Budapest, Napló, for example, wrote a dialogue that had allegedly taken place between himself and the composer in Vienna prior to the creation of Zrínyi. Goldmark was noted to have said the following, quote, "Yes, right now, the twilight of my life, I would like to make a confession to the world, to give a testimonial of flaming, unbreakable patriotism. My composition Zrínyi will be Hungarian and national in all senses. What do you think? Will my fellow citizens understand my intention that in this work, as if a last confession of my life, I would like to write my name in the history of Hungarian music, to bind myself to the Magyar spirit, because perhaps it will be my swan song." End quote. The spectacular success of this little patriotic exercise notwithstanding, Goldmark appears to have played it in front of an audience too sparse to fill the auditorium of the Budapest's most prestigious music institution in 1903. This was, however, the public that applauded so enthusiastically a decade later, 16, having grown by that time to a significant enough number to fill the auditorium completely. The reception was cool at the beginning, even if the orchestra needed to stand up to applause, and that was characteristic of the entirely new public behavior in the audience of the opera house. Another quote for you. "The audience completely filled the auditorium. The interest can be characteristically measured by the fact that all tickets were already sold out the day after the ticket office opened. Choreographer Egisto Tango, for those who want to know who that was, that's the name, was awaited eagerly, but when he arrived, he was greeted with only sparse, discreet applause and similar hisses, and thus the issue was settled. That is, and this is typical of a test audience," that's 1916, "when the night music was over, there was a lengthy demonstration celebrating Tango and Goldmark. The beautiful performance in the auditorium provoked heated ovations." End quote. Already a few years earlier, another satirical journal, Bolond Istok, published a caricature on the theatre-going public. For those of you who can read Hungarian, just a little bit for you to follow, but there is a translation here. In which individuals going to the theatre to see and be seen were now outcasts. Its usual puns of local manners notwithstanding, the caricature well illustrated the transformation of the audience into a modern one. It appears, therefore, that various challenges, the complete change in the political and cultural climate in the Hungarian capital, and even the devastating war and the looming demise of the monarchy notwithstanding, Goldmark was one of those very few 19th century colossi that remained popular among the local public, and that the opera house's new administration had finally managed what it had been what had been so difficult for it to achieve before. In other words, to claim descendancy from the greatest moments in the history of the national theater. Just as in 1876, the enormous success of the Queen of Sheba in Budapest reconfirmed that the interest of the opera-going public lay in the standard, spectacular, visually inspiring great works of the late 19th century that had behind them a history of favorable reception, both at home and elsewhere. But more than that, the 1916 premiere proved that Goldmark's attempt to experiment with Hungarian motifs was not in vain either. His patriotic statement with his symbolic poem Zrini, even if it had not secured him a full house on that specific occasion, secured him the support of the influential Hungarian political circles, to whom it seemed worthwhile to legitimize their political reputation by supporting the work of what they could frame as the local talent, inasmuch as the works themselves suggested allusions to Hungarian musical tradition. It was this legitimation that made it possible for the new opera administration to stage the work with new costumes, scenery, and choreography under Miklós Bánffy's intendantship and Tango's careful directorship. Finally, the decision to stage the work a year after the composer's death turned it into a tribute, and this silenced Goldmark's most ardent critics among the anti-Semitic and the modernist press. At the 1916 premiere of The Queen of Sheba, the opera-going public, now silent, attentive, and modern medium for the reception of music, comparable very much to what we know, for example, of 19th century Paris, in the work of James Johnson, for example. So that public welcomed and endorsed Goldmark's old-time favorite full-heartedly. Thank you for your attention.